welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, showcasing programs from radio's golden years. I'm your host, Mark Levonier, delivering an hour of horror. Later on, an episode of Escape from 1947. But first, an episode of one of radio's oldest horror shows, The Witch's Tale, directed and written by Alonzo Dean Cole, who also plays the role of Satan the Black Cat. This series was on the air as early as May of 1931, and we hear a broadcast from its last season on Mutual Radio, called Tourists Accommodated, from March 3, 1938.
The Witch's Tale.
Yes, sir. 101 year old. Well, Satan, it's come time again for me and you to distribute a little sunshine and happiness over the radio. So we'll tell everyone to douse their lights and we'll get at it.
Oh, yeah.
That's it. Make it nice and dark and cheerful. Sitting in the gloom's the way to hear our bedtime stories. Now, draw up to the fire and gaze into the embers. Gaze into them deep. And soon you'll see a fine, smooth highway running through the prairie state of Kansas. Driving along it through a night of pelting rain, you'll see a little automobile that's as old and battered looking as the man and woman in it are young and fresh looking. Listen close and soon.
Oh, honey, we don't dare drive much longer in this rain. It's getting all over the road.
Yes, these old tires are worn so smooth, they just don't grip. Oh, but gee, I hate to stop. I wanted to make at least another 100 miles tonight. I may find a job in Denver. The quicker we get there...
We'll make an extra 100 tomorrow in daylight. Well, our headlights aren't any better than the tires, Ken. And if we have an accident, there'll be no job in Denver or anywhere else.
All right, dear. There's a filling station. We need some gas, and I'll ask if there's a place near here where we can rent a room.
No one's come to meet us. Most people at the tourist places rush to their doors when they hear a car drive up.
Oh, ring the bell. That'll bring action. Where the dickens is it? Oh, I found it.
Ken, all the windows are covered with closed shutters.
What? It's all glass with lights behind.
You were fooled about that sign being lighted, too.
I'm not subject to delusions, and neither are you. What on earth?
I don't know. I don't think anyone lives here. Everything about the place has a deserted look.
Well, this is the first house we came to on the right, which tourists accommodated sign in front. That's what the garage men said.
I know, but no one answered the bell.
All right. No, I'm not crazy about the look of this place. I'd stop almost anywhere rather than drive through the rain.
So would I. Yes, did you hear a bell ring inside when you pressed that button?
Why, I didn't notice. Golly, there isn't any sound when I press. That must be out of order. I'll knock. Gee, the door pushed open when I touched it.
Everything's dark inside. Either no one lives here or they're all asleep.
I am here.
What?
And I am not sleeping.
I beg your pardon. I didn't mean to push open your door. I only started to knock.
That's all right. You are travelers who want a room?
Yes. This is my wife. We want to stay here until morning.
I accommodate tourists. Please come in.
Thank you.
Will you turn on the light first? I can't see anything beyond your door. I can only see a shadow of you.
Light?
Yes, light.
There are some candles on the table here if you have a match.
Haven't you electricity?
We have no power for that.
You mean the power failed because of the storm?
Yes. The power failed.
It must have done so just as we drove up. We were sure we saw lights behind your windows.
Yes, and you must have closed your shutters just as we drove up.
The shutters have been closed a long time.
Oh?
Light a match and get those candles going, Ken. Spooky talking in here in pitch darkness. Don't you think so, Miss Potter? But of course, you don't find it so in your own house.
I have been here a long time in darkness.
A long time in...
Darling, I can't find a match.
I have a packet. Here.
Oh, thanks. Now we'll locate those candles. Oh, I see them. Now.
Oh, that's better. Oh.
Good Lord.
You're disappointed in my house. You see it untidy and dusty. I'm sorry, but I cannot help it.
This hall looks as though it hasn't been cleaned for years.
I used to take such pride in my housekeeping. Everything was always thick and span. I'm so ashamed. I lack the power.
You've been ill, haven't you? Your face is so pale.
I've been helpless. So helpless. Please don't think my home was always this way.
The place is filthy, dear. We can't stay here.
It's at least shelter, Ken. And I'm afraid to drive on.
Please don't go away. I have some nice, big, airy sleeping rooms, and you can have the best.
You look at them, Ken.
Oh, all right.
And you won't go away?
We'll stay with you tonight.
Mona, don't...
Oh, I'm so glad. I'll call my son. He'll show you where to put your car.
Your son?
I thought that...
Aren't you Miss Potter?
I'm Mrs. Parker.
Mrs. Parker?
I was sure the garage man said that...
So was I. But of course, he said a lot of things that don't tally with facts.
I don't understand.
Oh, it doesn't matter. If you'll call your son, he can help me get our bags, since Mrs. Blake has decided to remain here.
Just a moment. What's your charge for a room?
I used to get a dollar for a couple.
A dollar?
But that doesn't matter now. I'll find my son. Joe! Oh, Joe!
Only a dollar.
The way she said it, she'll take less.
For a place so badly kept, I'll see that she does.
She wouldn't stay here at any price if you left it to me.
I feel very sorry for that poor woman somehow.
Sorry? For anyone who lives in a pig pen? And why should we stay here because you're sorry?
I don't know. I just feel we ought to. I realize how silly I am. It's strange. The place doesn't merely look dusty and neglected. It's as though nobody lived here.
My son is coming to help you, mister. Joe will be right here. He'll show you where to put your car.
Or let the car stay where it is. I'll get drenched to the skin if I move it.
But if you leave it in front of the door, he'll see it when he comes and be afraid to enter.
He will be afraid of my car? Who is he?
Yes, who is he?
I suppose...
Your car must be moved.
Huh?
This is my son, Joe.
Oh, how do you do? I didn't hear you come in. You startled me.
Me too.
I'm sorry. I'll show you where to move your car, sir.
You insist I move because you're expecting someone who won't come in if he sees my car where it is.
Yes.
We're expecting him.
He'll come tonight. At last.
Well, you're being rather mysterious about this late caller. But it's none of my business, of course. I'll move the car.
My umbrella's in the back seat, Ken. It'll keep you from getting very wet.
All right, dear.
I'll show you where to place your car.
Well, come on.
Shall I show you your room now?
No, I'll wait until my husband comes back. Have your son been ill, too?
Ill?
Well, his face is so pale, like yours. And you said
he
that...
He has been helpless, as I have been.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
It's awful to be helpless.
I can imagine. What happened? Were you both in an accident?
No. We were just helpless.
I mean, what caused it?
We were helpless. Helpless then. So long after. So long. But now our helplessness is nearly at an end.
You mean you're almost well now?
Tonight will change everything.
Tonight? Oh, Ken?
Yes, search for the skin. After making me drive my car in among the trees, son of yours, Mrs. Parker, wouldn't even help me carry these suitcases back to him. Now he doesn't even close the door behind us. I've got to do it.
Oh, Ken, Mrs. Parker's son's been very sick. She's just been telling me about it.
Oh. Why didn't you say so?
But even a sick man could have held an umbrella over me while I did the heavy work.
I'm sorry. I couldn't even do that.
Helpless. Helpless.
Say, didn't you get wet walking through that downpour? Your clothes looked drier when we left this room.
My clothes don't show any effects of what they've been. Excuse me. Good night.
I'll show you to your room now. Will you bring the candles, please?
Why, of course.
I'll carry them, Ken. You bring the bag.
Okay, yes.
Up these stairs. Please, go first, young woman.
All right.
You next. I'll follow.
All right.
You may have any room, but the first at the head of the stairs is the best. It's mine.
Oh, we wouldn't put you out of your room.
I don't sleep in it now. Open the door and go right in.
Oh, everything's covered with dust, just as it is downstairs.
I know. But I can't help it. It's a nice, airy room.
Airy because half the window panes are broken. If it weren't for those closed shutters, the rain would be pouring in.
I'm so ashamed.
The bed linen under this outside spread's clean, Ken. Awfully yellow.
We can't stay here, Mona.
Wait. How much will you charge us for this, Mrs. Parker?
Nothing. Nothing at all.
Nothing?
Nothing.
I just want you here tonight. Someone must be here besides Joe and me. And him.
Him?
I don't know what you will know soon. You'll stay?
It won't cost us anything, Ken. And every dollar counts.
But Mona...
We'll stay, Mrs. Parker.
Oh, thank you. You're a nice girl. I'll leave you now.
Good night.
Good night.
Good...
Mona!
Through that door, Ken. Through that door, lock it.
Of course, dear. What on earth is the matter?
Didn't you see, Ken? Didn't you see she went out of the door?
See what?
She passed in front of that lighted candle, between me and the candle, and I saw the lighted candle through her.
You couldn't have seen what you thought you did, sweetheart. You realize that now, don't you?
Oh, of course. One can't see lighted candles through solid bodies. Well, Mrs. Parker's is as solid as yours or mine. Oh, I'm ashamed of myself for becoming hysterical about such a silly thing. Oh, but for a moment, the most awful feeling of horror passed over me, dear. Oh, I was desperately afraid.
It's all right now. This filthy old house that's given you the woolly tummy. It'd start my imagination going if I left it. It looks as though it ought to be haunted.
Oh, I'm almost sorry that we stayed here. Even to save a dollar.
We'll get a few hours' sleep and leave as soon as daylight comes.
Yes. You locked the door, didn't you?
Uh-huh.
Is the lock good and strong?
An iron bolt as thick as my thumb. What are you still afraid of, darling? That frail little woman, her sickly-looking son. I could break both of them in two with one hand at the same time.
No, I'm not afraid of them. I wonder who they're expecting.
I've been thinking about that. They were afraid he'd go away if he saw our car outside.
Why, do you suppose?
I haven't the vaguest idea. I think I'd like to wash my hands and face. Wonder where the bathroom is.
She didn't hear it.
I'll go look.
Wait, I hear a car outside.
Maybe the expected guest.
A coupe is coming up the drive. I can see it through the crack in the shutter.
Stop where we left our bus first.
Man's getting out.
A big fella.
Yes. And the key for the door must be a member of the family.
They're so anxious about his coming. You'd think one of them would be on the lookout to let him in.
Think so. It is the one they expect.
Got the door open?
Oh, we're an awful pair of busybody, spying on the poor man.
Yes, kind of silly.
He's gone back to the car, taking a beggar.
He turned his headlights off now. We can't see any longer.
No, not that it matters to us.
I'm going to look for the bathroom.
I'll go with you. I don't want to be alone here.
All right. Say, she didn't leave any towels here.
Don't see any. Maybe she left them in the bathroom for us.
Maybe.
Open the door softly. She and the boy may have gone to bed.
I think they were going to wait up for that man.
We haven't heard their voices.
They may have gone to bed at that. Here goes the door.
Oh,
someone downstairs isn't afraid of waking anybody. Come on.
Where?
To ask whoever's down there about towels in that bathroom. No. Wait.
What?
Look.
It's the man we saw come in. He's kneeling before that fireplace with a lantern.
And trying to pry a stone loose from the hearth. Why?
Stop. I think he hears it.
Get back up those stairs, quiet.
Yes.
Down that creaking board.
Who's there? Who's there? I see you.
Don't want that, Jonathan.
Don't shoot.
You're waiting for me here, were you, eh? But I'll come back when I got the chance and you'll get me with that goods at last, eh? Well, you won't tell no one of what you've seen.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Put that gun down.
Come there, here. Come there, you rotten cop. With your hands held high.
Don't shoot. My husband isn't a policeman.
And I suppose you are not a lady dick either, eh? Come down.
Neither of us have anything to do with the police. We don't know why you're here. We don't care. We're merely two strangers who rented a room here for the night.
Rented a room?
Yes, you know this is a tourist lodging house. You must. You had a key to the door.
The key I have means I know you are lying. This house belongs to me. I inherited it. No tourist or anyone else has stopped here since I was took away to jail. For 5 long years, this place has been dead empty.
Did a woman let us in tonight?
You lie.
Call her and her son, they'll tell you.
A woman? And a son, you say?
Yes.
Mrs. Parker, come and tell this man.
Mrs. Parker, she wasn't here. She couldn't be here.
I'm here now.
No, I see her things.
I'm here, too.
Joe!
They're not helpless now.
And you've come back to us at last.
Get away from me! Oh, dear! I have a gun! If I come any closer, I'll shoot!
We have weapons, too.
Your old weapons.
Keep away!
There's a butcher's knife in.
And the boy has a bloody axe.
Don't come any closer! Don't come any closer with it! Get away!
Hey, the boy!
His bullets don't stop them.
Was it raining that awful night?
The boy has hit him with an axe.
Oh, God, they've got that butcher.
Oh, they're hacking him to bits.
Help! Murder!
Mona, look!
I can't! They've killed him! Killed him!
Don't look at him, look at them!
They're fading away!
Yes. Fading from our sight like ghosts.
That's what they are. Ghosts!
Come away from this house!
Yes, out of this awful house! Out of this awful house!
We can rest now, Mother.
Yes, Joe. We can rest.
Well, the Hutch Parker sure did. Like you said, I'd find him, Mr. Blake, but you can see for yourself there ain't no mark of butcher's knife or axe on his body.
I didn't expect there would be, Sheriff.
Neither did I.
What's your opinion of Hutch's demise, Doc?
No wounds of any sort on the body I can see. Near as I can figure before holding an autopsy. The fellow's heart just stopped.
It stopped from fear and terror. As I was almost sick when we realized what we'd seen.
Now, sober-minded men like me and Doc here are pretty hard to convince that ghosts killed Hutch, Mrs. Blake.
I know, but we've told you the truth about what we saw.
Doc, are you as sober-minded as I think you are?
I'm pretty much like you, Dan.
Then let's be honest and confess these young folks in confidence. That we don't think their story so crazy as it sounds.
You believe
we hold political jobs, young man, and the voters expect us to have good sense. But in confidence, we're chumps enough to, altogether disbelieve.
I'll tell you the part of the Parker story you don't know. Lucy Parker, whom you think you saw tonight, used to run a tourist room in our business here and prided herself on keeping one of the tidiest places in the state. She was the widow Stevens at the time I speak of and changed her name to Parker later. Her son Joe was a trusted employer of the bank over in town. Hutch Parker drifted along one day from nobody knows where, met this widow woman with a nice home and income and talked herself into becoming a second husband. From the day she married him, he never did a tap of work, and gossip was that he and her and Joe didn't get along so well together. That went on for a couple of years. Then, 5 years ago, Mrs. Parker and her son was found dead in their beds. Joe's head had been bashed in with an axe, and his mother had been stabbed with a butcher's knife. They was killed in their sleep, while helpless. Oh, I recall you telling me how whatever you saw here dwelt on that word, helpless. Well, Hutch was immediately suspected of the crime and arrested. But there was a peculiar angle of the case. Joe had been in possession of $50,000 worth of negotiable bonds belonging to his bank that he's supposed to close a deal with the morning he was found dead. And them bonds couldn't be located.
That stone Parker was trying to pry from the fireplace.
I found the bonds under that stone a minute ago, Mr. Blake, just before I called you and Mrs. Blake into this conversation. Hatch had done a first-class job of hiding them, for this house had been searched from cellar to garret. But to make a long story short, not finding the bonds sort of helped Hutch's case. He claimed burglars had killed his wife and stepson and then got away with the $50,000. And a darn fool jury believed him. They acquitted him of the charge of murder, and he'd have gone scot-free if the police back in Ohio hadn't heard of his arrest and found that his fingerprints tallied with those of a fella they wanted on an old forgery charge. They sent him to the pen in Ohio, and he only got out a few days ago. He hot-footed it back to this house where the bonds was hid and found Lucy and Joe waiting. They weren't so easy with him as the law had been. But, of course, they know that he was guilty.
And they made his punishment fit his crime.
They couldn't open a door or light a candle. But they could kill
him. Mm-hmm. And they could also do you a good turn. They did one for you.
Good turn?
Yeah. Lucy and her boy, one of them bonds returned to their rightful owner, I imagine, which you will bring about. And the banks kept a reward offer standing of $5,000 for their return.
You mean we'll get $5,000?
Yep.
Ken!
Mona!
Well, it'll take a couple of days for the details to be settled, but your claim's clear, and you'll get the money. In the meantime, I suggest that you put up at Miss Potter's place.
Miss Potter?
Yeah. She runs a first-class rooming house about 3 miles down the road from here. First place on the right with a tourist accommodated sign in front.
Sheriff, we never want to look at that kind of a sign again.
Not even for $5,000.
Bedtime story, Satan. And next week, I'm gonna have a birthday and another yarn to spin ye.
The Witch's Tale, on Tuned to Yesterday, a Mutual Broadcasting System episode from March 3rd, 1938. This is an hour of horror on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Livonier. Now time for Escape, with a broadcast called Wild Oranges, previously heard on the Orson Welles Theater in 1941, but Escape gave the story the treatment on CBS on December 17, 1947.
You are trapped in the dank darkness of a ruined plantation house, and somewhere in the pitch-black room is a homicidal maniac armed with a knife, groping for you, trying to prevent your escape.
Escape, produced by William N. Robeson, directed tonight by Richard Sandville, and carefully plotted to free you from the four walls of today for a half hour of high adventure.
Tonight we escape to a deserted sand pit off the coast of Georgia, where terror stalks under the Spanish moss, as Joseph Hergesheimer tells it in Wild Oranges.
What could have appeared more innocent of danger than that barren, low-lying shore of southern Georgia? What could have seemed less laden with terror than that lovely little cove, so tranquil and well-sheltered, so warmly bathed in late afternoon sun, as we dropped the anchor of our catch and prepared our mooring? And yet, there was something. First, it was an odor of a grove of wild orange trees in late bloom, growing defiantly amid the tangled undergrowth of the shore. The scent was strong and exotic and heady, and as I smelled it, I felt a vague uneasiness. Then as I watched the shore and Halvard, sole member of my crew, furled the sails, the mirror of the cove was shattered by a movement. First I thought it was a fish leaping and playing in the water. Came around a spit of land from an inner bay, and then Halvard was beside me.
That's queer, sir.
Huh?
I would have bet there was nobody within miles of here. But there's someone swimming.
Huh? Yes. It's a girl.
Aye. She'll be surprised when she discovers us, no doubt.
And embarrassed. Oh, she swims well, doesn't she? As if she's been born in the water.
Ah, yeah, that she's seen us.
Yes. Now she's running away. That sprint would win an Olympic race. I wonder what she's doing here, where she comes from.
Perhaps there.
Hmm? Where?
Through the trees. There's a house. You can hardly see it. I spotted it a moment ago.
Oh, yes, so there is. Oh, but it's a ruin. It's rotting away. No one could have lived in that since the Civil War.
Well, there may be others back there.
Yes, but this coast is deserted. Marked a swamp on the chart.
Well, I don't know, sir.
It's strange. Very strange. Yes, it was strange. And stranger still was this vague uneasiness I felt. As twilight fell, the aroma of the wild oranges was overpowering. Suddenly, without knowing why, I slipped on a jacket, went to the side and dropped into the tender. Halvard stood by to cast off. He asked no questions, and I said nothing. What could I say? I didn't know myself why I was going. I pulled the tender up on the soft sand of the beach and walked up a dim path through the orange grove. The scent of the blossoms was full of such wild sweetness that I picked an orange and tasted it. It was bitter, but of a pungence that was new and rare and strangely delicious. The dim moonlight only accentuated the ruin of the house. There were other smaller, ramshackle buildings scattered about, overgrown with weeds and creeping vines. This had once been a great plantation. Now it lay still and lifeless. Then I saw the light. Round the side were a smaller portico held off the weeds. A single doorway was framed in the pale light of an inner lamp. As I approached, I saw a shadow move across it, so swiftly, so furtively, that it was gone before I realized it had been a man. Then I saw her, sitting on the portico, rocking softly in her chair.
What do you want?
Nothing. When I came ashore, I thought no one was living here.
You're from the white boat that sailed in at sunset?
Yes, and I'm returning immediately.
It was like magic. Suddenly, without a sound, you were anchored in the bay.
I've robbed you, too. Some of your oranges are in my pocket.
You won't like them. They've run wild. We can't sell them.
They have a distinct flavor of their own. I should be glad to have some on my boat.
All you want?
My man will get them and pay you.
Please, don't. Oh, Nicholas attends to that. Oh, won't you sit down? My father was here when you came up, but he went in. Strangers troubled him.
I should be getting back. I'm sorry to have disturbed you and your father.
No. No, it was nothing.
Good night, then.
Good night.
That was all. Fragment of commonplace conversation. But it was enough. Now the uneasiness I felt, the strangeness of this place took shape for me. I saw it in her lovely, fragile face. I heard it in her voice. There'd been a hidden terror, a terrible, controlled fright that approached hysteria. There'd been a warning in it, and something else, a plea. By the time I got back to the boat, I was completely unnerved, and Halvard made matters worse.
You find anything, sir?
There are people living there.
Well, there'll be water then. Maybe we could stay here a couple of days, huh?
What do you mean?
Well, this is good anchorage, sir. I'd like to unship the propeller, and the topside could do with a coat of varnish.
No, we're going on south.
Aye, sir.
No, wait, Halvard. Of course, you're right. We need a couple of days' work before we head into blue water. We'll do it here. And so we stayed. In the light of morning, the strange dread I'd felt seemed foolish, especially when I went ashore and found the girl looking young and fresh and fragile, fishing off the little pier in the inner bay. She had a pathetic little rod and line, so I got our tackle from the boat and landed a big rockfish for her, enough for several dinners. We were carrying the fish to the house when we came on a pale, thin ghost of a man sitting on the portico. He started a swift retreat, but too late.
Father, wait. this is my father, Litchfield Stoop.
How do you do, sir?
Lily, you all know I can't. Strangers there.
Father, you must manage yourself better. You know I wouldn't bring anyone to the house who would hurt us. And see, we are fetching you a splendid rockfish.
Oh, yes. So you are. We are alone here, sir. The man is away, my daughter and I. The fish is acceptable.
If you will carry it in for me. Nicholas would do it, but he's away, and the father isn't strong. This way. We have no ice. I must put it in water. In here, right there. Thank you. You've been very nice. Now I suppose you'll go on across the world.
Not tonight. We're staying here, making repairs.
Where do you come from? And where are you going?
From Cape Cod. I'm going to the Guianas.
Isn't that South America? I've traveled far. On maps. I was born here in this house, and I've never been 50 miles away.
Oh, well, that's incredible. You seem like a girl who's been everywhere in the world and had the best education, everything.
My father has many books in there, that's all.
Your eyes are remarkable. Gray-green, like olive leaves, and magnetic. I came ashore to ask you if you had a large water supply, and if I might fill my casks.
Of course. Rainwater, the cistern's full.
I'll send my man Halbert, then.
Yes.
There's something else in your eyes, in your voice. What is it? Fear?
Fear? Why, no, of course not. What should I be afraid of?
I don't know. But I saw it in your father's face, too.
It's only your imagination.
Yes. Yes. Goodbye, then. Thank you for the fishing. Strange how this girl should upset me so. I tried to resist, but that evening I found myself going back to her. Tying the tender to the little pier, I watched as she came to meet me.
I'm glad you came. The fish was...
Oh, don't tell me. I'd rather not know. I might be tempted to mention it in the future, and I'm sure it would sound like a fish story.
But it was imposing. Nicholas waited. He's our man. He's back. Let's stay here by the sea. It's so lovely in the moonlight.
All right. Oh, it is nice here.
I lied to you today about fear. I suppose I am afraid. I suppose my father has passed some of his fear on to me.
Why is he afraid?
Well, that's a long story, going back to the First War.
Please tell me.
Well, he was a young man then, and he didn't go to war. It wasn't that he was a coward, exactly. He just couldn't adjust to it, mentally. People mocked him, laughed at him, and threatened him. That's when a sort of perpetual fear started. He ran away. He met my mother and married her. They came here. None of us has ever left this lonely place. Never will, perhaps.
Your mother?
She's dead. Loneliness killed her. Perhaps it's no wonder that I sound timid or afraid. Perhaps I am.
Aren't you lonely, too?
I don't know anything else. But what about you? Who are you that you go sailing about the world with only your sailor for company?
Oh, I'm nobody. My name is John Woolfolk.
And you do nothing but sail about the world?
Nothing.
Why?
Well, let's say I don't like modern society. Let's say I don't like entanglement.
I see.
Oh, I didn't mean...
You needn't apologize. I envy you your freedom. I sit here a great deal and watch the ships far out there on their water roads. You are enviable. Sailing where you like. Safe and free. Safe and free.
There is something more than you told me. More behind this fear in your voice.
No.
But perhaps I can help.
No. No, please.
What's that?
It's Nicholas! Blowing on the cargo. I've got to go in.
I'll come with you.
No. No, please. No. Don't come. You'll be going soon.
Tomorrow, perhaps.
Then, goodbye. Goodbye.
Now I knew the terror I'd only sensed was real. This girl was possessed by fear. This house held some terrible secret. What could it be? Next morning, Halvard suggested we repaint the engines, and I agreed. We'd stay another day or two. Later, Halvard went in to fill a cask of water. He came back without the cask and livid with rage.
There was some idiot in that house. Next time I'll take the pistol.
What do you mean? Where's the cask?
It was broken.
How?
It was filling it at the cistern, and this idiot, a huge hulking brute, came out of the house. He told me to get away. Well, I tried to explain that we had permission, but he came at me with a knife, gibbering. Well, I hit him, but it was like hitting an ox. He put his foot on the cask and crushed it.
I'll see about this.
You be careful, sir. The man's not right. He's dangerous. Plenty dangerous.
I went ashore and around to the back door of the house. Millie wasn't in sight, and when I knocked, a lumbering giant with pig-like eyes came to the door.
What do you want?
I take it you are Nicholas, the man who broke my water cask.
It was full of our water.
I'm not going to argue with you. I came ashore to instruct you to keep your hands off my property and my sailor.
Oh, let our water be.
I told you I wouldn't discuss the matter. I don't have to justify myself to you. Just remember, keep your hands
off.
Don't
get me started.
What do you mean, started?
Don't get me started. Mind, I warned you.
Put down that knife.
Go away now. Don't get me started.
Go away.
Don't get me started. I'm telling you.
Nicholas, stop. What is this? What's the matter?
Nothing. Nicholas and I have had a little misunderstanding, that's all. Yeah. It's nothing to worry about. Nothing to worry about, I said. But when I got back to the boat, I couldn't help asking myself why I'd left her with that brute. I just about made up my mind to go ashore again to check up when I saw her waving on the beach. She wanted to visit the boat. I went and got her. There was no hint of terror in her face now. Just shining, girlish wonderment at the polished metal and the gleaming wood of the ketch. I offered to take her for a sail, and her face lighted up like a child's. But when we reached the heavy swells outside the reef, her face got white, and she froze.
It's so big.
Are you frightened? I'll turn back.
I'd rather you didn't. I must learn. I'm not a child.
No, we're going back. Before we got to the anchorage, her panic was almost out of control. But safely moored once more, she calmed slowly and said,
"How strange. To be forced back to this place I loathe by my own cowardice."
"It's not cowardice. The sea is frightening to those unused to it. Come, you must forget it now. Halvard will have tea for us in a moment. How do you like our boat?"
"It's quite wonderful. Have you nothing else to care for? No place or people on land?"
"None."
"And you're satisfied?"
"Hardly. All the things most men value were taken from me in an instant."
"Can you talk about it?"
"Well, I haven't for 12 years. Not to anybody, but now, yes, I think I can. You see, we were just married, only a few days. We were very, very happy. Then, in one instant, she was dead. It was a silly, stupid accident, thrown from a horse, without rhyme or reason."
"So you left everything, taking your revenge on the world."
"You could put it that way, I suppose. I simply don't want to take a second chance to become involved and be hurt."
"But that's living, to be hurt. Do you think you can escape so easily?"
"I don't know."
"Oh, I must go. Father will be waiting."
"Why so suddenly? Oh, yes, I see. That's Nicholas on the beach looking out here, isn't it?"
"Yes. Dinner will be ready."
"Why do you have a servant like that? That man's dangerous."
"You mustn't say that. Please don't. Just take me in, please."
Now I knew that she too was afraid of Nicholas. I could see it in her eyes. Why then did I let her go to him? I don't know. I was confused, I guess. That night a storm broke, a raging wind and rain, and to match my tortured mood. I hardly slept. Her face was always before my eyes, and by morning I knew that I must do something. I rode the tender in through a drizzling rain. I went up through the orange grove and stopped in the bushes by the house. Someone was coming out of the house, and I crouched down out of sight. It was Millie. I rose and called to her. "Millie!"
"Oh, it's you. I was just coming out to look. I was afraid you'd gone out. The sea is like a pack of wolves."
"I won't go alone, not without you.
What are you saying? That's madness.
No, I've got to talk to you, Millie. There's a lot that needs explaining. Things that I have a right to know.
No, not here. Come.
She led me into one of the smaller ruined buildings. What must have been a store in the days of the great plantation. We crouched far back in the dripping shadows of a corner.
No.
Millie, I love you. For the first time in 12 years, I'm living again, and I love you.
I know nothing of love.
It's easily learned.
Well, perhaps if things were different someplace else, I might care very much.
Then I'm going to take you away someplace else, make things different, give you the chance.
No, it's too late. You came too late.
Why, Millie? Why? What is it? What is it you fear?
Nicholas.
Oh, he's nothing. Nothing to be afraid of. Has he been bothering you?
He says he's crazy about me. He says I must marry him.
Where is he now?
No, you mustn't be on. Something frightful would happen.
Not frightful, just unfortunate for Nicholas.
You don't understand. He's not human. There's something about him.
What about him?
He came here in April. We were glad to get him. Servants are impossible to get back here in the wilderness. He would work for the smallest wages. Only a few days ago, I found out why he was glad to be here. I was cleaning his room, and I found this.
Let's see. Wanted for murder. Iskan Nicholas. Homicidal maniac.
He knows I found it. He knows. And he's been furious. Then you came, and he ran and hid in the pines. But he told me if I spoke about it, then it would happen to me. And if I left with you, it would happen to Father. You see, he thinks I'm in love with you. He told me to send you away. He said you must leave today.
Millie, I should have realized.
He says I must not be away for longer than an hour. I must go.
Look, Millie, it'll take us a couple of hours to get the boat ready. I'll come for you tonight at 8. Now, tell him you saw me and I promised to go. And act quietly. Say you've been upset. You'll give him his answer tomorrow. Then at 8, bring your father and walk out to the wharf. That's all. But do it without hesitation or preparation.
Oh, don't let him hurt us. Oh, please, don't.
Not now. He's finished, Millie. But do as I say. It won't be long, hardly 3 hours. And then, freedom. Now that I knew, now that there was to be action, I felt better. Talbot and I got the catch ready for sailing. At 8 o'clock, we tied it up to the little pier. The storm had abated slightly, but it was still raining. I got up on the dock and waited for Millie. 10 minutes passed, then 20. Something was wrong. I told Halbert to wait there with the tender. Then I walked slowly up to the house. It was dark. I went up to the side portico to the heavy door. A tiny crack of light showed under it. I pushed it open. The light came from a parlor to the right. I looked in. On the floor lay a body. Old Litchfield Stope. He was dead, crushed. His arm twisted grotesquely under him. There was not a sound in the house. Slowly I walked through the downstairs rooms. Nothing. And back in the hall I heard a slight creak. Upstairs, someone had moved. Was it Millie, alive? Or Nicholas, lying in wait? I groped slowly up the stairs. I dared not use my flashlight. It would have made me a target for his knife. The upstairs hall was pitch black, and still there was no sound. I inched my way along the wall, slowly. Then I stumbled on a loose board. The pistol flew out of my hand, but the stumble saved my life. The same instant I felt Nicholas lunge, heard the knife sing past my ear and thud into the wall, felt his great bulk smashing on my shoulder. My gun was somewhere on the dark floor. His knife was embedded in the wall. Now we were grappling hand to hand, rolling on the floor, kicking, tearing, scorching, crushing. My strength and wit against the massive bulk of a maniacal killer. How many minutes did that unequal struggle last? I don't know. It seemed an hour. Several times, as if by common consent, we rested for minutes at a time, locked in tight embrace. Once we rolled apart and lay panting, the breath aching in my throat. Then I heard him groping along the wall, searching for the knife or the gun. I threw myself on him again, but he was too big, too furious. I felt my strength ebbing away. His fingers were closing over my throat. With one last effort, I tried to throw him off. Roll him off! Ah! I staggered dazedly to my feet and looked up. He'd fallen through the banister down the stairwell. Nicholas had landed on the bottom. He lay there on the stairs, sprawled, his head at a grotesque angle. But he was not dead, only stunned. I leaned against the wall, looked at him stupidly. There was something I was trying to remember. What was it? Then she came down the steps and I remembered. Millie.
I had to walk right past him. There was no other way. Right past his head and my skirt. I think we better go away. It's quite impossible here with him in the hall. We have to pass so close.
Millie, yes, we'll leave at once.
I must tell you about my father. You know, in Virginia, the woman tied an apron on the door because he would not go to war, and that preyed on his mind, and he was afraid of the slightest thing.
Yes, yes, I know, but we must go.
Things upset him so. He had no strength.
To hear him talk like this, like a sick child, was almost more than I could bear. But now I heard something. Nicholas had gotten up. He stood there and stared for a moment at us. Then he started slowly up the stairs. He was going for the knife.
This little thing upsets him.
Millie, we've got to go.
I was to meet a man. We were going away someplace where it'd be peaceful. He said at 8 o'clock. But Nicholas suspected, you see. He asked why Father had put on his heavy winter clothes. Then when I tried to go out, he pushed me.
Millie.
And do you know what Father did then? He came up and he said, "Don't do that. Take your hands off my daughter." His lips shook a little, but he said it. That's the important thing.
Yes, yes, of course. Your father was a brave man, after all. Now come, that man is waiting for you. There's no time to lose.
Father said, "Take your hands off my daughter." Nicholas killed him, of course. Crushed him like a little mosquito. But it was a brave thing to do.
I couldn't wait any longer. I had to risk whatever injury it might do to her mind. I could hear Nicholas coming back. I swept her up in my arms and carried her out into the night, down the path to the little pier. Behind me, I could hear Nicholas crashing through the brush like a giant animal in pursuit.
Are you all right, sir?
Yes, about done in, but all right. Here, help me get her in the boat.
Yes, sir. There. Yeah. Somebody's coming.
It's Nicholas. He's got a knife.
Good. They wanted to get back at him. You get in, sir. I'll take care of him.
Talbot went to intercept Nicholas on the path. I heard them meet and struggle for a moment. Then a stooped figure came walking slowly onto the pier. I prepared to shove the boat out into the water and then...
All right, sir. It's me.
Oh, Halbert. Where's Nicholas?
They stopped him. He was all pumped out.
Are you hurt?
No, just a scratch. He missed his knife at first in the dark. It's nothing.
Good. Let's get away from here, then. I held Millie in my arms as Halbert rowed to the catch erratically, I suppose, because of the storm. We were ready to cast off in 2 minutes. The last obstacle would be the narrow passing out of the cove. In this storm, it would be dangerous, very dangerous. I started to take Millie into the cabin.
Nicholas! There's Nicholas! In the doorway!
Nonsense. Nicholas is dead. You're on my boat, Millie. You're safe, Millie.
Safe? With John Wolfolk?
I am John Wolfolk.
But he... You didn't come.
Yes, I did, Millie. And you're safe. Come.
I want to stay here.
All right. You sit here beside Halvard. I'm going up front to take soundings.
In this van, you won't be able to hear me if I call.
No, but you can hear me. Remember, we've only 3 feet clearance. You'll have to hold it steady through the passage.
Oh, I'll manage it.
Halvard, this is no time for pretense. How do you feel?
All right. I've taken a knife before. Just a scratch.
All right, we'll fix it as soon as we get outside. Now let's go. Turn over the engines. Pull up anchor. The boat headed into the tearing wind of the storm, sped swiftly toward the narrow inlet. A foot too far on either side and we would hit. In this sea, that would mean death for us all. I stood far up on the bow, taking soundings, feeling out the passage.
Roar!
The howling wind carried my call back to Halvard. The boat veered. I realized he must have lost a lot of blood.
Halvard! Halvard, steadier!
Slowly, haltingly, it came around.
Three and a half! Steady now!
But it was anything but steady. The boat wavered and swung as if an amateur hand were on the wheel. In a moment, we might hit.
Three and a quarter!
We're in the passage.
Oh, steady, Herbert! Steady! Just another moment. Just one moment. 3.5. 3.2. Goodbye, Herbert!
Good boy, Herbert, I called. But when I went back, it was not Herbert at the wheel. It was Millie. Millie, her hands steady, her eyes washed clear of any madness. Millie with a tight little smile on her face, but no fear. And Halbert lay rolling with the swells in the bottom of the cockpit.
I'm afraid he's dead, John. He was wounded worse than you thought.
Halbert dead?
He told me to take the wheel. Said it was life or death. Then he slid down like that.
When? When was this?
Back there in the passage. Just when you said 3.5. I'm afraid I wasn't very good. But I held on.
Oh, Millie. You were wonderful.
No. Not yet. But I'll learn, John. I'll learn.
Escape is produced by William N. Robson and was directed tonight by Richard Sandville.
Escape, on Tuned to Yesterday from the 17th of December, 1947 on CBS. And that's it for this hour of horror on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's golden years. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark LeVonier. Thanks for listening.